Hello, and thank you for listening to episode 15 of 60 Minutes With. I'm Dave, and in this episode I'm going to be joined by a writer and broadcaster who's got an eclectic body of work, but in this show we're going to be concentrating on 1960s and 1970s British sex films. So please sit back, relax, get comfortable, and enjoy the 60 minutes that I spend chatting with Simon Sheridan. Right, Simon, first of all, obviously, I have to thank you for joining me in this episode. It's another one I've been really looking forward to, so thank you for giving me your time tonight.
Oh, well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure. I'm quite excited to hear what we're going to talk about.
we're going to cover 1960s and 70s British sex comedies, I think, aren't we?
Yeah, which is my niche in life. A lot of people write about comedy or about horror films or James Bond or something, but I think I found my niche in life, and that seems to be writing about 1960s, 1970s British sex films. So it's good to be an expert in something, I guess, and that's what I know about.
Well, if you're going to be an expert in anything, I think that's a good one to be an expert in.
It's quite interesting. It's interesting, you know, and I know a lot about it, but I'm not sure if it's of any particular use to anybody.
Well, before we get on to how you discovered them, could you tell the listeners a little bit about your background then, your early life growing up, what you did, and then how you eventually came to be interested in this genre of film?
Well, yeah, I mean, this isn't a story. I don't think I've ever told this story publicly before, and I can think of, but my introduction to British sex films happened at a very, very early age. I was born in the 1970s, and I remember, initially I was raised in Gloucestershire, though I've spent most of my life living in Bristol, but my adult life certainly. But I was raised in Gloucestershire, and there was a cinema in the centre of Gloucester. It was the ABC cinema. And I remember as a small boy walking past the frontage of the cinema. And back then, of course, as you all remember, cinema posters were fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And they were generally hand-painted. Nowadays, cinema posters are all done with computers and photography. But back in the 60s and 70s, they were actually painted. And I remember walking past the ABC cinema in Gloucester, in King Square. I mean, it's now a Wetherspoons pub. It hasn't been a cinema for a very long time. And I walked past the cinema, and there was a poster for a film called Confessions from the David Galaxy Affair, which is a terrible title, coincidentally, for a terrible film, but it was a British sex film. It was X-rated, and before the early 1980s changes for the BBFC, later became an 18 certificate, sex films were X certificate, which had a certain sort of romance about it anyway, didn't it, really? You would go and see an X certificate film.
Oh yeah.
So I walked past the cinema and saw this poster. It's the most garish poster, and it's got a couple of sort of semi-naked women on it, and Alan Lake, who was Diana Dawes' husband, I didn't know who he was, but in the middle, flanked by the semi-naked women. And of course, when you're a small child, I mean, that's, you know, I knew what a rude image was, and my grandparents read the Daily Mirror, and at the time, the Daily Mirror did have page three girls in it, a bit like the Sun. So I knew about naked women even as a tiny little boy, and I knew this poster was for a film that was X-rated. It was rude. But the interesting thing is Diana Dawes' name was on the poster, as was Bernie Winters. and some of your listeners will remember Diana Dawes was a big movie star in the 50s and 60s and latterly in the 70s, and Bernie Winters was a comedian. And but I knew these people from Celebrity Squares. Do you remember Celebrity Squares?
I certainly do, yeah.
It was a game show that was on Saturday night, and it was presented by Bob Monkhouse, who's one of my comedy heroes. And there were, I think they brought it back recently, haven't they, with Warwick Davis introducing it, actually. And so there's nine celebrities sitting in a grid. And back in the 70s, you got some really interesting names on Celebrity Squares. I remember, on one occasion, Vincent Price was on it. He was on Celebrity Squares. But invariably, you get people like Willie Rushton on it, and Arthur Mullard, people like that. And Diana Dawes was often on it, as was Bernie Winters. So as a child, walking past this poster, I'll get to the end of my story in a minute, walking past this poster, And knowing it was for a sex film and it had semi-clad naked women on the poster, but Diana Dawes and Bernie Winters were people that I watched on a Saturday tea time. So I couldn't really understand why people I watched as a child were also appearing in something that was really rude. So my first introduction to a British sex film was through Bernie Winters and Diana Dawes and that poster outside the ABC cinema in Gloucester.
That's brilliant. Because I remember, didn't they, just briefly going off on a tangent about celebrity squares, wasn't it usually the comedian that was in the centre one? I think was the spot they normally put him or her.
That's absolutely right. And the centre square tended to be the regular, and that's where Willie Rushton often sat.
Yeah.
And then the other eight squares, it would be different celebrities. But Diana Dawes was a regular on that. Vincent Price would do anything, I think, in the 1970s, certainly the late 70s. But to see him on there was quite unusual, I thought, even as a child, because I knew that he made horror films. That's the first inclination I got that there was another sort of cinema other than the Disney films that I used to go and see when I was a child.
And that was it back in the day. I remember too, walking past, because this was where I used to live as well. The cinema was just one screen, and you'd walk past, and as well as the fantastic posters that they'd have like the lobby cards and the stills. They'd have like a set of like four or six stills from the film as well, and you'd walk past.
And some of those stills were quite, you know, quite racy. I mean,
they
You had nudity in those. I mean, it would never be allowed nowadays, but I've got quite a collection, as you would imagine, of sex film memorabilia from the 60s and 70s, and you'd be surprised at how explicit some of those pictures are that were shown in the lobbies.
It was a different time completely back then, wasn't it? I know it's hard to explain to some people, but it really was such a different time back then.
It was. So, yeah, it totally was. I mean, I didn't see a British sex film until I was much older, by which time they'd ended. They weren't being made anymore. But it's interesting, As a small child, I did see a pornographic magazine, which was owned by my brother. I got an older brother. And in that pornographic, I was a very small boy, but you know, small boys are curious, aren't they? They often look in their siblings' bedrooms and uncover things that they shouldn't be looking at. And I remember being in my brother's... my brother won't be listening to this, so I can say this. I was looking through my brother's stuff, and I found a porn magazine, and it was a copy of a magazine called White House. And White House was a magazine, quite an explicit pornographic magazine named after Mary Whitehouse, the cleanup TV campaigner. So there was that nice bit of irony there. I didn't realize it at the time. But I looked through this copy of White House magazine, and there were photographs of a woman called Mary Millington. And Mary Millington was the same woman I'd seen on that cinema poster outside the ABC in Gloucester. And so those two things happened to me when I was a child. And I think they just stuck with me, particularly Mary Millington, has stuck with me throughout my life. And that's how I ended up writing, I think, about British sex films.
That's great, because my memory of Mary Millington, I remember her being big in the 70s and her name being everywhere, but I don't know a lot about her. I was thinking about this today before I thought, right, I'm going to have a chat with you. I don't really know a lot about the woman herself, apart from being able to name some of the films that she was in and knowing her name was everywhere back in the day, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, can you remember seeing cinema posters with her name on? And
oh,
like
yeah.
That?
Oh, I certainly can, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mary Millington was, without, you know, I'm not exaggerating here, she was the biggest female British box office star of the 1970s. I mean, even though she's been much maligned in her life because she was a porn star, she did make mainstream sex comedy films. And they were hugely successful. I mean, massively, massively successful for her and for David Sullivan, who was the producer of the films. So she was a very bankable box office star. I sometimes say she was like the equivalent of Roger Moore. You know, Roger Moore would be appearing in huge films, big box office, big budget films. But Mary Millington was like the female equivalent. I mean, her films were very low budget, but they were making an equivalent amount of money in proportion to their small budget. So she was a big, big star in the 1970s. I can tell you a little bit about her if you'd like to know. She
I'd love to.
She was born in 1945. She was an illegitimate child, but she was raised in Dorking, which is a rather smart town in Surrey. And she trained to be a veterinary nurse. But her career went in a completely different direction because her mother, very sadly, was dying of cancer. And in the late 60s and 1970s, cancer treatment, certainly for breast cancer, was not as it is now, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And Mary needed to make money in order to pay for her mother's cancer treatment. And she was a very pretty girl. She was tiny. She was only 4'11" tall, but she was blonde, had a beautiful body. She was married. Her and her husband were swingers. So she was already quite sexually liberated. She didn't have many inhibitions. And it was suggested to her that perhaps she become a model. And of course, being 4'11", you're too short to be doing fashion modeling. So she went into glamour modeling. So she was doing nude modeling in London. And from there on, she ended up appearing in hardcore pornographic films and made an awful lot of money doing it in order to pay for her mother's cancer treatment. And her mother lived with her. And all through her career, as far as I'm aware, from speaking to people who knew her, her mother didn't know that she was Britain's number one porn star. Wow. Even though she was bringing in all this money. So she appeared in a film in 1970 called Miss Borlock, which is a German film. Borlock means borehole. It's not the most appetizing of titles. The film was called Miss Borhole, and it won the Golden Phallus Award at the Wet Dream Film Festival in Amsterdam in 1970, which is, I mean, there are American pornographic film awards, you know, in America, and there is in France and around Europe, but this was probably the first, and it was every year in Amsterdam. And Miss Borlock won the Golden Phallus, won the best film at that competition. In November 1970, and the film was released on 8mm film. It was a long time before VHS tapes and DVDs, and it sold 300,000 copies. I mean, you just could never imagine a DVD or a Blu-ray selling that many copies nowadays, but it sold 300,000 copies on 8mm film, and was one of the biggest selling, you know, hardcore porn films of all time.
What? How much would these sell for in the day? Have you got any idea of that?
They were selling for about, you know, between 15 and £20, which back then was an awful lot of money.
And of course,
you couldn't. You had to show the film, so you had to have a projector at home, a home projector. You also used to have a projection screen, which you'd pull down over one wall. Or you draw the curtains and do it up against curtains, and the so to speak, and you would you project the film and you'd watch the film. So they were purely for masturbation. They weren't. There was no plots particularly to these films. They were very basic, but they were very well filmed, beautifully made. A lot of them were made by the Color Climax Corporation in Denmark, but Miss Borlock was made for a German company. And it did incredibly well. So she became a very bankable 8mm porn star. And she made about half a dozen of these films afterwards, subsequently in Holland, in Germany, and in the UK.
I see. I remember as well, I think the main one that listeners may be the most familiar with is Come Play With Me. And I remember that poster being up as well everywhere. That's one of the most famous posters too.
Yeah, well, Come Play With Me came a little bit later.
Yeah.
She was making these hardcore 8mm films, which in this country were strictly illegal to buy and to distribute, because hardcore pornography, unbelievably, has only been legal in this country for about 15 years or so. Virtually every other country in Europe has had hardcore pornography legal since the late 60s. Scandinavia, France, Germany, Spain a little bit later. I think Spain was 1975. But throughout the 70s, hardcore porn was illegal in this country. So you had to buy these things under the counter, and I'm sure you've heard that expression. You'd go to a sex shop and you would ask for something under the counter. It was the illegal material which you couldn't buy off the shelf. So things like Miss Borlock and Mary's other 8mm films were available in this country, but you had to buy them under the counter. So from 8mm films, she graduated to appearing in more mainstream cinema films, the sort of films that would have played at the Odeon or the ABC or the Gaumont cinemas. So that's what Come Play With Me was. Come Play With Me was a more of a mainstream British porn film.
I seem to recall as well, I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong, but my memory of it is they were usually in double bills as well. You know, I remember like the quad posters were always like Come Play With Me and another one.
Yeah, well, Come Play With Me was originally, I'll tell you something about the release of it because it's quite interesting, but came out on its own initially, but you're right, a lot of these films were reissued as double bills, triple bills, or even quadruple bills. I mean, by about 1981, 82, you could pay £1.80 to go to an Odeon and you could see four British sex films. So, I mean, so a lot of them were cut down, but you could still be in a cinema for about 4 or 5 hours, you know, watching one British sex film after another. So you're absolutely right. So yeah, a lot of these films were in double bills, but as were horror films, as were kung fu films back in the 1970s. I mean, the 60s and the 70s in the UK was the era of exploitation films, and people were increasingly turning their backs on the cinema in order to watch television. I mean, TV was king. People had colour televisions and they were very reluctant to go to the cinema. So pretty much the only things that would lure people to go back to the cinema was to see the sort of material which they couldn't see on BBC One and ITV. And that, generally speaking, was horror films, porn and kung fu films. And that's why those three genres of films were so massively popular in the 70s, because you couldn't see that sort of stuff on the TV. So that was the only reason people went to the cinema to see that kind of material. But, I mean, the cinema was in huge decline in the post-war years. I mean, I did some research into statistics with regard to cinema screens, and it's shocking. I think in about 1955... there are about 5,500 cinema screens in Britain. 5,500 cinema screens. But by 1975, there was 1,500 cinema screens. So you know, cinema screens had decreased by about two thirds because people just weren't going. So we have people like Mary Millington to thank for healthy box office returns in the 1970s, because without her, and people like Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, who were making horror films, and Bruce Lee, who was making kung fu films. In fact, Bruce Lee was still making kung fu films after he died, wasn't he? I mean, they were still making these films after he died, yeah, with stand-ins. So those were the people who were luring people back to the cinema.
Can you remember your first trip to the cinema?
It was probably to see a Disney film in the late 70s, I should think. Yeah, I can't remember which one. I mean, no, I can't remember. Though I do, funnily enough, I do actually remember going to the cinema, my local Odeon, and I saw a trailer for a British sex film, because British sex film, well, no, actually it was an American sex film. It was called The Other Cinderella. So it sounded like it was a Disney film, but it wasn't. It was a live-action film, but it was called The Other Cinderella. But in those days, X-rated films often had U certificate trailers, yeah. So they would show a certain amount of what was in the film, but not really the rude stuff. So I remember seeing that trailer and thinking, what the hell is this?
It's so funny you should say that, because I saw The Other Cinderella at the cinema, and this was going back, oh, like you mentioned, when you'd pay so much and you'd go to the cinema and you'd this was when you'd watch two, there'd be one film on and then there'd be the main one. And I'm fairly certain, and a good friend of mine can correct me on this because I went to see it with him, I'm fairly certain the main film was Excalibur.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, so that would have been early 80s, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would have been. And then we got in there, and then you hadn't a clue what the first film was going to be. You'd never knew what it was. And then the other Cinderella come on, and it was that. And we were,
Oh,
cause,
wow.
yeah, and we remember because Excalibur was so good, we went to see it a couple of times. So of course, we saw the other Cinderella a couple of times too.
Yeah, well, that would tie in because I would have seen the trailer in the early 80s when I was a boy. So, is there like a character in it, like Pinocchio, but instead of his nose growing, it's his cock or something like that? I seem to have, there was something. I think there was a lot of nursery characters in the other Cinderella, but I've never seen the film. I
Haven't
mean,
you? All I can
no,
remember
no.
of it is this one line, and we still quote it now. It's whenever anybody sort of goes down on her, the line is, "It's a snapper, it's a snapper," and
Oh, really?
it's a line that's quoted all the way through this film. Is it's a snapper, and that's all I can remember of it, and nothing else.
I should see if I can find the trailer on YouTube and remind myself about it. But yeah, I do remember that. So, but that was an American sex film. I'm pretty sure it was American. So, or it might have been German dubbed into American or
Yeah.
something. But my love has really always been British sex films. But Come Play With Me. We were talking about that. Come Play With Me was a massive, massive success, and it was Mary Millington's first. It wasn't her first movie at the cinema, but it was certainly the biggest hit of her career. Have you ever seen it, Dave? Have you ever seen Come Play With
I have, yeah, I've watched quite a few of them over the years, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like a carry-on film, but with full frontal female and male nudity in it, and it's about a load of nymphomaniac nurses who work at a health farm in Scotland and seduce all the very unattractive male clients. And it's a bit of a romp, I mean, it's good fun. I mean, it's not a classic, but in terms of its success, it was wildly successful. It was filmed in 1976 and it was released in April 77, and it ran in London solidly without a break for 4 years.
Whoa, that's a hell of a long time.
Yeah, it is, and it holds the Guinness World Record for the longest running British film of all time. And this is maybe something people can use in a pub quiz, because if you said to somebody, "What is the, what film has run for the longest concurrent time in a British cinema?" You'd probably say, I don't know, The Sound of Music or Star Wars or E.T., but it's not. It's a British sex film called Come Play With Me. And I think if people watched it now, they think it was rather quaint. But in 1977, it was deemed to be incredibly rude. And it was filmed in a hardcore version as well, though the hardcore footage was never seen publicly, particularly in Britain. It had one erroneous screening at a cinema in London, but the rest of the time it was screened in the softcore version. But it played virtually every cinema in the whole of the UK. It played the Odeons, the ABCs, so it was a mainstream sex film really. But it just made a ma I mean, at the one cinema in London, it made about £500,000 just from one cinema alone, which
Oh.
not in the late 70s was, a vast amount of money, and people kept going back and back, and it was still showing when Mary Millington died, because sadly Mary Millington died at the age of 33 in 1979, but it was still showing in 1981 at the cinema in London, and was still being reissued around the country as late as 1989. This is incredible, in the era of sort of like acid house. And that, I think of the music in the Manchester scene and stuff like that. You think,
Yeah.
God, there was, society was so different then, and yet this hoary old British sex film was still playing the provincial cinemas in 1989. It seems incredible, but it's worth a look. It's a bit of a forgotten classic
It
of
is.
British cinema, and I mean, what did you make of it? Can you remember what you thought of it?
I can't remember a lot of it because I used to work in a video store in the 80s, so of course I would watch everything and anything that was in there. And it's funny you should mention under the counter films because even then there was like the under the counter list of videos that people would come in and ask for too. But I was.
Were they asking for hardcore films? Were they?
Yes,
Or, yeah.
yeah.
And of course, before the Video Recordings Act in the early 80s, VHS tapes were a bit of a fad in the late in the late 70s, early 80s, and they were uncertificated. So you could buy hardcore VHS films because there was a loophole in the law at the time. I mean, Margaret Thatcher closed that up with the help of Mary Whitehouse. But yeah, so if you worked in a video shop, there, as you quite rightly say, that there would have been explicit material hidden away under the counter.
Oh yeah, there was this, and it was called The List. People would just come in and quietly ask for The List.
Wow, yeah, I like things like that. That's great.
Was this the norm then? You said that there was some hardcore footage that was in Come Play With Me. Was this the norm or the exception to the rule for a lot of these British sex comedies?
Well, I wouldn't say it was the norm, but it happened. It didn't happen with all of them, but it happened with an awful lot. And I've written a book. Probably the book I'm best known for is a book called Keeping the British End Up, which is a history of the British sex film from I think about 1958 to 1983. Yeah, because it's got 25 years worth of filth in my book. And I think there's about 160. I've reviewed about 160 British sex films in it, the ones that were released theatrically. And interviewed the people who made the films, who starred in them, and I review the films, but I also look at the whole history of it. And of course, Keeping the British End Up is a line from a James Bond film. It's one of the I think it's the closing line in The Spy Who Loved Me, isn't it? When Roger Moore is having sex with one of the Bond girls, and I think Q is asking him what he's doing, and he said, "I'm just keeping the British end up," because he's just about to shag her. I've always loved that expression, keeping the British end up. So I thought it'd be a great title for my book, and in my investigation into British sex films, yeah, I'd say a good percentage of those films were shot in a hardcore pornographic version, as well as being a softcore version. Certainly, when they were playing at the Odeon or the ABC, it was strictly softcore. But as I was saying earlier, the rest of Europe were busying themselves watching hardcore pornography since the late 60s. So British films in a softcore version were of no interest to them whatsoever. I mean, why did they want to watch a softcore film when they could watch a hardcore Swedish film or a Danish film or a German film? They didn't want to watch British softcore. So in order to make these films more marketable to an overseas audience, extra scenes were shot with people really shagging and doing all manner of things, which were then cut into the film when they were released in Europe.
Ah, okay. Now it's...
Some of the directors I've interviewed claim not to have directed the hardcore footage. I don't believe all of them. I believe some of them. Some of them say that the film then was sent to the distributor and then somebody else came in and directed the hardcore and then that was spliced into it. I mean, I think that was probably true for some. A lot of these directors directed the hardcore stuff as well, but they don't, even now, 40 years later, some of them don't admit to it.
Yeah.
And a couple of them quite well known. In fact, there's one person I'm not going to mention on the radio because I'll get in trouble, but there's one British filmmaker who's very, very well known now, who directed hardcore porn in the 70s, and nobody knows, well, I know about this, he knows about it, he's told me. I think people will be quite surprised, but you know, I think people are a little bit more relaxed nowadays. In the 1970s, you could be thrown in jail for making porn, so you had to be a bit more cloak and dagger about making these porn films, because people were, they were sent to jail for 18 months, 2 years, 3 years. I've gone through endless amounts of clippings at the British Library in their archive, and you wouldn't believe that the people were really sent to jail for filming other people shagging. I mean, it's just incredible. And I'm not talking about child pornography here. I'm talking about consenting over 18-year-olds, over 21-year-olds having sex, and it was illegal to get involved in that. So people were fearful of the police back then, and so these films were shot in the most secretive of circumstances.
It's crazy, isn't it, that Britain was so far behind everybody else. You know, you mentioned the other countries, you know, across the world and in Europe where it was legal to do it, and yet it took Britain so long to legalize it.
Yeah, and we've got Margaret Thatcher to blame for that, because porn was nearly legalized in 1979. There was a guy called Bernard Williams who wrote an extensive report called with the Williams Committee. He was asked to look into pornography and the effects of pornography in Britain and on British people. And his findings in 1979 were that the porn was fine. You know, let people watch it. If they're over 18, let people watch it. Then Margaret Thatcher came into office, I think in May 1979, and she quashed the findings of the report. And that's why porn stayed illegal for the next 20 years, pretty much. It wasn't until the Tony Blair government that porn, you know, finally came out of the shadows and people were able to buy it. And of course, in the internet age, nobody can stop you from looking at anything. So these laws were archaic. And of course, the BBFC now certificate that's the British Board of Film Classification, the BBFC, they now certificate hardcore pornography. So it's mainstream now. I mean, teenagers are looking at it on their phones, aren't they? It's a very different era to when you or I were growing up.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, you mentioned about, you know, you finding one of your brother's porn mags, and it was, I remember, it was like hitting the jackpot on a fruit machine if you'd find, you used to find like a supermarket carrier bag with some porn mags in that somebody had like stashed under a hedge somewhere.
Yeah, I remember being at secondary school, and there was a boy in my class whose parents, I think they were swingers. I mean, there was a lot of swinging. There's still a lot of swinging going on, I'm sure, but they were swingers or something, and they had loads of hardcore porn. And one day he smuggled in a Colour Climax magazine, which was from Scandinavia.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really hardcore, you know, really hardcore stuff, unlike most British porn. And I remember everybody took a turn with the magazine. Everybody had it one night in the class. You know, we all swapped it one night, and then the next day we brought it in, and somebody else would have it. I mean, it's terrible, really. It's disgusting when you think about it now. We were all masturbating over this one magazine. I remember that. But it was rare, really, you know, when in the 80s to see anything as explicit as that. It was quite unheard of, really.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was totally unheard of. And going back to these films, and I'm quite, I mean, my memories of them, I remember like the posters for Come Play With Me. And I'm talking about like the mid to late 70s now. Of course, the Confessions films, I mean, they were huge, I remember them. But let's take it back a bit to the 60s then. What sort of British sex comedies were there in the 60s? Because I'm not aware of any of those, really.
Well, British sex comedies, as you say, things like Come Play With Me or Confessions of a Window Cleaner or Adventures of a Taxi Driver. Hmm. I mean, they ruled in the 70s and they were carry-on films but with more nudity. But in the 60s, it was a very different kettle of fish. In fact, even if you go back to the 1950s, filmmakers were trying to find any way of putting nudity in a film. So initially, they made nudist colony films. So these would be films set in naturist camps. And these films would be called things like Naked as Nature Intended or Nudes of the World. And they didn't really have any plot particularly. It was just lots of naked women playing volleyball or throwing beach balls at each other or trampolining or playing hockey and anything really to get the boobs jiggling, you know, on film. And the filmmakers would tell the British Board of Film Censors, as it was then called, that these films were educational. They were portraying an alternative lifestyle, and that alternative lifestyle was naturism. But really, it wasn't. It was to get predominantly men into the cinema to look at bare breasts.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of the nudist camps that were used. In fact, there's one very famous nudist camp called Spielplatz, which means playground, which is in St Albans in Hertfordshire, and it's still there now. And quite a few of these nudist films were shot there. But the owner of the nudist colony, a chap called Charles McCaskey, he thought the intentions of the filmmakers were honourable. He didn't realise that they were just there to ogle at the naked women. So these films were really successful, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the film Carry On Camping, but there's a sequence in Carry On Camping where Sidney James tries to get Joan Sims to go and see a dirty movie at a cinema, and they go and see a film called Nudist Paradise, where there's a lot of women playing volleyball in the nude, and that film really does exist, and that film really did get a release, and Sid James is watching a real film. It wasn't something they created for Carry On Camping. It was real. So, I mean, nudist film, people got bored of nudist film. So then filmmakers were trying to look at other ways of getting nudity in a film. So they started doing Mondo movies, which were feature-length cinema documentaries, which could feature different vignettes. They might show some African tribes women, dancing naked or topless, or they might show something about women wearing topless dresses. There was a fad in the mid 60s for topless dresses. I mean, they never caught on. I mean, it was just something to film, or they might have done something about showgirls in Soho. So they were looking for other opportunities to include titillation on screen. So sex comedies as such didn't really exist until the late 60s, when cinema censorship was relaxed slightly. People have got bored of going to see nudist films, and people have got bored going to see these Mondo films. I mean, some of these Mondo films are absolutely fascinating. There's one called London in the Raw and Primitive London, which just kind of shows the so-called naked underbelly of the capital, and you can buy all these films now as well. I mean, which is marvelous. When I first started writing about these films, they were very difficult to find, but now I think partly due to the success of my book, if I can say that, I'm very proud of Keeping the British End Up. More and more of these films finally come to the surface and have been reissued. So yeah, people were getting bored of these kind of films. So the British sex comedy didn't really come in until the late 1960s, and there were films like I Like Birds, which is
What a great title.
one of my favourite movie titles, which was released in 1967, directed by a guy called Pete Walker. And Pete Walker, more famous nowadays for the horror films that he made in the 70s, but in the 60s he was making sex films. And he made a film in 1968, which I've just been working on the DVD release on, which is coming out on DVD this summer. He made a film in 1968 called School for Sex. I mean, you couldn't. I mean, that title, it just hit all the marks. People used to talk about the dirty raincoat brigade. Middle-aged men who were sexually frustrated, who would wear brown raincoats, and they would go to cinemas and masturbate underneath their raincoats. I mean, a film called School for Sex was made for those people.
Exactly, yeah.
I think Pete Walker's actually said to me, when I thought of that title, I just knew that there would be queues of middle-aged men queuing around the block to see the film. And it was hugely successful. I mean, School for Sex was probably the first big, I call it a bonk buster. It was the first blockbuster of the sex comedy era. And it ran in London for about a year, and it ran in New York for about 2 years.
Whoa.
And if I'm not sure you've ever seen that film called Shaft, that Richard Roundtree film,
Oh yeah, of course I have, yeah.
which is a great sort of blaxploitation film, and that came out in 71, I think. And in the opening sequence of that film, he's walking through Times Square, I think it is, in New York, and he walks past a cinema showing the New York premiere of School for Sex. So Pete Walker's, I was with Pete the other week, and he's very proud of the fact that his film gets a name check in Shaft. So yeah, that, I say School for Sex was probably the first big hit. But once again, you watch it now, it's very tame. I mean, it's nothing to do with schoolgirls whatsoever. All the women in it are well over 21. So there's nothing dodgy about it now, but the title sold the film.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
it's not one of my favourites, but it made an awful lot of money, so you can't take that away from it.
What are your favourites then, if you were to list a few favourites? Some recommendations then for listeners. Here you go. If they
Right.
haven't dipped into this genre yet, what would you say for them to go into first?
Well, I mean, there's some curious films, and the last edition of Keeping the British End Up, I think I list my top 10 favourite British sex films. I have to think about it, but I'd say Confessions of a Window Cleaner is a film that you'd have to go and see, or get on DVD, and it's about a randy window cleaner who just shags a lot of women on
I've
his
got to ask, is this the one? I've got my most vivid mental image of this time and films of this genre is it's from the Confessions film, and I'm fairly sure it's the window cleaner one, where he's in a kitchen and the washing machine, so the washing machine's broken and there's all the kitchen fills with suds.
That's right, yeah.
Is
Yeah, I
it
mean
that one?
that's the iconic scene. I'll explain to your listeners what happens. I mean, Robin Asquith plays the lead role in that film, and Robin's a very versatile actor, and he worked with Zeffirelli and Pasolini, and he's worked with all manner of directors, but he became most famous in the 1970s for dropping his trousers. And I mean, he's a very talented comedian, a comic actor, should I say, but he's best known in Britain for his bum. Which is a shame, really, because he's really good. And I was filming actually with Robin a couple of weeks ago, and he's a charming guy and very, very funny, and he's got loads of great stories. But in the 1970s, he on film, at least, I think off screen, he was quite prolific as well. The stories he's told me, but on screen, he shagged an awful lot of women. And there's a scene in Confessions of the Window Cleaner where he goes round to see a sexually frustrated housewife. I mean, all the women in these films were sexually frustrated housewives, of course, and that was the cliche. And he goes round, and there's some soap suds get mixed with water, and everything goes wrong. So the housewife's kitchen just gets full with soap suds. And him and her have sex in the soap suds, and that's the scene you remember. And it's probably one of the most iconic scenes of British cinema in the 70s, not just sex cinema, but of British cinema as a whole. That's the scene people tend to remember. So, Confessions of a Window Cleaner is one to see. Probably Adventures of a Taxi Driver is another classic. Come Play With Me, certainly, and another film which I was talking to your partner about, which is Eskimo Nell, which has just recently come out on Blu-ray. And Eskimo Nell is special because it's a sex film about sex films. It's about the 1970s sex film industry. And it was written by a friend of mine called Michael Armstrong, who's a very witty writer. And it's about a couple of rather green around the gills young filmmakers who make a porn film in order to satisfy a rather demonstrative producer. But it's a very, very funny film. It's got some great actors in it. It's got Roy Kinnear in it, and Anna Quayle, and Katie Manning, who of course was in Doctor Who for many years, playing Jo Grant. She's in it, and Christopher Biggins is in it. So there were some big names in these films. I think people forget that. You think about British sex films, you think, oh, they were cheap and nasty, but they weren't. I mean, some were, don't get me wrong, a few were, and that makes them quite interesting as well. But the majority of them featured very mainstream people like Harry H. Corbett and Dinah Dawes and Irene Handler and people like that. And people have said to me, why did they do these films? Well, it's quite simply because the British film industry wasn't doing very well, and actors wanted to work. At the end of the day, all actors have got very fragile egos, and they like to be working, and they like to be earning money. And if that meant appearing in a sex film, they would do it. And also, it was good for their CV. I mean, I'm not sure if you remember Till Death Us Do Part, which was a sitcom about Alf Garnett, and Alf Garnett's wife was played by Dandy Nichols. Dandy Nichols was a very talented a character actress, very prolific, and she appears in Confessions of a Window Cleaner, as does John Le Mesurier from Dad's Army. And they appeared in these films quite happily, and the films were hugely successful, so it's good to have a successful film on your CV. Certainly, Confessions of a Window Cleaner was the biggest box office British film of 1974. It wiped the floor. It cleaned up, pardon the pun, but it really cleaned up at the box office. I mean, no other film in Britain made as much money as Confessions of a Window Cleaner in 1974. So if you were an actor, you wanted to be associated with a successful film, and so that's why they did it.
Of course, yeah, because there was this period, wasn't there, de jure, in, you know, the mid-70s, when these types of films, they were just like box office gold every time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'd say probably all of them made money. I mean, there were a couple of flops, but that was generally they made an awful lot of money, and of course they could make a lot more money in Europe as well, in their hardcore versions as well. Like I said, Come Play With Me ran for 4 years in London, and Confessions of a Window Cleaner, you know, played virtually every country in the world, you know every territory in, you know, even South Africa and Australia, Canada, America, Europe. They all wanted to see these films, so it was, and you can make them very cheaply. I mean, Come Play With Me was made for about £120,000, and worldwide probably made $5 million. I mean, you'd never get a return on a movie like that nowadays on a low budget film, but back then you could do it. So yeah, they were making an awful lot of money. So that's why filmmakers were making them.
We haven't touched on either as well about how you started watching them. You've walked past the cinema and you've seen the poster now. What's the story of when you first started watching them? I'm presuming it was on VHS then.
Yeah, it was. You remember back in the 80s when I was obviously a bit older, and VHS tapes were in big chunky boxes.
Yeah, you know? They
were enormous, and they're very collectible now. I mean, if you look on eBay now, there's a whole industry of buying and selling VHS tapes. I mean, some of them go for £300 or £400 each. Just because of the lurid artwork on them. So I think I don't know how old I was. I would have been a teenager by the time I first saw a sex film. I can't remember which one. It probably was a Confessions film, actually. It was a Confessions film. And having seen the cinema posters for them when I was a child in the 70s, when I was old enough in the 80s to actually see the film, you know, I was intrigued. And slightly addicted, to be honest, Dave, watching these films. I wanted to see as many as I possibly could, and I remember going to video shops, and you know, my friends wanted to rent RoboCop or Total Recall, you know, on a big chunky VHS, but I wanted to rent Come Play With Me on VHS, and because my friends thought I was nuts. But those are the films I wanted to see. And then I went to university in Bristol, and I wrote my dissertation on British sex films. So I had to watch an awful lot then. it's just accumulated. And then in 1999, I wrote my first book on British sex films. I've now written 3 books on British sex films, and there's a fourth one I'm planning on writing as well. So that's probably how it started. But I do watch other films as well.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, I don't just watch British sex films. And, I've got quite varied film taste. You know, I love John Waters films. He's probably my favourite American director. And, I love the films of Jan Svankmajer and, Sidney Lumet, people like that. They're my sort of favourite. In fact, my favourite American film of all time is Network.
Great
which
film,
I think. Yeah, which has just recently come out on Blu-ray. That's one of my favourite films. And so it's not. I'm not only addicted to British sex films. I do sometimes give myself a break from them and watch other stuff as well. Otherwise, you know, it just turns your brain to porridge.
It's good, though. It's good, like you said, because the availability of them now, you can get hold of them a lot easier. And as well as the books. I mean, you mentioned Eskimo Nell as well, but you're also on the commentary track as well about it.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that was great fun, and I can talk a lot, as you can hear. I talk a lot about stuff. So yeah, to do the commentary track was great, and I did that with Michael Armstrong, who's the writer of the film, and we were shattered after an hour and a half. We were really very very tired. I mean, watching the film for like the 100th time and talking about it, we were really exhausted. But yeah, I love doing audio commentaries, and I love working on DVD releases. And I think I've done nearly 40 DVDs now. I was looking back at it recently, and I've forgotten how many DVD releases I've worked on, but I'm very lucky. They keep asking me to do them, so I'm very happy to do it. I don't always do British sex films, but generally speaking, they are. If they want something to do with 1976, they contact Simon Sheridan. So that's fine. I'm very happy to do it. Very happy to do it.
Oh yeah, I mean, it must be so good though to be so involved in something that you've got such an obvious passion for.
Yeah, well, I think I know my stuff. Like I was saying at the beginning of our chat, so I mean, I would be no good talking about Russian cinema from the 1920s or something like that. I'd be hopeless. I mean, you've got to write about stuff that you're interested in, and I've always been interested in British films, particularly British sex films, and that's my niche, as I was saying. So I'm quite happy to carry on, you know, being interviewed about it and writing about it and working on DVDs to do with that. I'd flounder probably if I was asked to look at French new wave films from the 50s or 60s. I wouldn't have a clue, to be honest.
Yeah. Would you say then that, because we talked about how big these were in the 70s, was the advent of VHS into the home the tipping point that it signalled their decline?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the last big blockbusters of the 70s were films like The Playbirds, which is Mary Millington's best film. In fact, I would say if any of your listeners were going to watch one British sex film, they should watch The Playbirds, which was made in 1978, and Mary Millington is rather ironically cast as a policewoman. It's kind of like a porn version of The Sweeney. That's how I describe it. But it's good fun. I mean, it's an exploitation film, so there's no airs or graces to the plot or the performances, but it's good fun. And that was a big hit. And then the same year came Joan Collins in The Stud. I'm sure you've heard of that film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She did a film called The Stud, and then she did a film called The Bitch. And they were probably the last really big blockbusters of the sex film era. But by about 1979, 1980, more and more people had VHS players, VHS recorders, or Betamax. Remember Betamax?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Yeah. And also they had access to video libraries. I remember, you know, when I was growing up, there was just one video library where I lived. But, you know, it was stacked full of really obscure titles. They had John Waters films there, and they had porn films there, and they had things you'd never seen on TV. And I think people, if they wanted, as you were saying, working in a VHS shop, people were coming in asking for porn. They were asking for stuff under the counter. What was the point of going to your local Odeon to watch a softcore sex film when you could rent a VHS tape that had hardcore porn in it, and you could go home? At the end of the day, these, you know, making no bones about it, these films were about masturbation. And who in their right mind would really want to masturbate in a cinema when you can masturbate at home in your lounge with the curtains drawn, watching a VHS tape? So the VHS era was the death knell of British sex films. So by 1983, no more British sex films were being made for theatrical release. That was it. They were finished. So it's quite sad, really. But all good things have to come to an end. And we had 25 years worth of sex at the cinema. And of course, we still do have sex at the cinema. I mean, look how wildly successful 50 Shades of Grey has been. I mean, it's the most profitable 18 certificate film ever released theatrically in America. So there still is an appetite for sex at the cinema, but people, if they want to watch hardcore porn, they just look at their internet. They just look at their laptop and go on the internet now. So you don't need to be turned on going to the cinema.
Yeah.
I think 50 Shades of Grey was probably very aggressively marketed at women, and I think that was probably also why it was very successful. I've not seen it. I don't particularly want to see it, but I'm glad it's been successful, because it shows that there is a market for sex on the big screen somehow.
Oh, yeah. And are there any films from the 60s and 70s, this sort of classic era, that have not been released on DVD or Blu-ray yet that you would like to see released?
Oh, there probably is. There is a couple, but I'm not going to say because I'm working on the I'm working on the releases of a few films this year. One I'm particularly excited about, which hasn't been seen for about 30, let me think, probably about 35 years that I'm working on. So I'm quite excited about this. There's one or two, but I think mainly they've come out. There's one or two lost ones that nobody knows what's happened to them, but they've disappeared forever. But I think the majority of the ones worthwhile for digging out, they're available. But yeah, there's one I'm working on at the moment, but I'm not going to say what it is just yet.
You'll have to come back on and update everybody then
Yeah,
afterwards.
maybe one day. Yeah,
You'll
yeah.
have to. So what's the rest of this year hold for you then, Simon? Without giving too much away, what can you tell the listeners of what you've got planned?
Yeah, well, I'm working on on another book at the moment, which is quite exciting. Plus, I'm working on a load of DVD releases. I'm working with a production company in London on a couple of documentary ideas as well, which I'm hoping are going to come to fruition. And I'm just about to start filming something with Channel 5 next month as well. So I'm pretty busy at the moment, which is good. It's good to have lots of projects bubbling at the moment. So yeah, I feel quite content. I certainly love writing about films and working in TV and film. That's very exciting for me.
I think I should also mention as well to listeners, because just to finish this off, just to put a little bit everything into context and round it all off, because it's amazing, because I've got to read some of the books either. I was looking through everything that you've written, and then you go from, keeping the British end up to the A to Z of classic children's television.
Well, as I say, it's good to have a niche in life, and I know a lot about British sex films, but it's also good to diversify sometimes. So I've written half a dozen books. So I've written books on other things as well. I've written a book on Kylie Minogue, which is kind of slightly odd, and I've written a book on ABBA, which was torture to write.
Was it really?
And yeah, it was, yeah. And not because I don't like ABBA. I do like ABBA, but I can't listen to ABBA now because I for a whole year I just listened to ABBA and wrote about ABBA. And so it's kind of ruined it for me. And then I also wrote this book about kids' TV, which was great fun to write because it was right about writing about my childhood and the sort of programs that I watched when I was a kid. Things like The Clangers
Oh, look at
and
me.
because all these shows are coming back, which is very interesting. I mean,
Yeah.
I watched the trailer for the new Clangers the day before yesterday. The Clangers is coming back, and Banana Man's coming back, Danger Mouse is coming back, Thunderbirds is back on TV next Saturday. So the week tomorrow, yeah, it's back. So a lot of these shows have a long history, but also I think they're going to have a great future as well because parents remember the sort of things that they watched when they were a kid, and I think they'd like their children to watch it as well. So I have written about kids' TV as well, which I've absolutely loved. But somehow you don't mix the genres. You don't mix kids' TV from the 70s with British porn
Of
films,
course,
especially nowadays. Though there are some links. It's interesting. A good friend of mine, an actress called Gay Soper, who's a West End stage actress. She was the female lead in a sex film in 1975 called The Ups and Downs of a Handyman, which was a bit of a Confessions of a Window Cleaner knockoff. But Gay was also the voiceover of The Flumps,
Wow.
which was a kids' TV show for the BBC. So she was making a softcore porn film on one hand, on the other hand, she was also lending her voice to a kids' TV show in half past 3 in the afternoon. So there are some links. There are a few more links as well, but I won't bore you with it. But yeah, so that there is some lineage between British sex films and British kids' TV as well.
That's amazing. And I think everybody always thinks that the kids' programs they watched when they were a child were always the best, because the ones I remember are like bizarre ones. Like Pipkins was quite bizarre, but I used to love it. Hartley Hare used to like frighten the hell out of me.
Yeah, no, I've interviewed Hartley Hare,
Have you
and
now? Oh,
yeah, I
right.
have, yeah, because for my kids' TV book, I interviewed a lot of the performers of the shows. And interestingly, I interviewed quite a lot of the performers while they were in character. So I've interviewed the Flumps. I've interviewed Crystal Tips and Alistair. I've interviewed Ivor the Engine, and I've interviewed Hartley Hare. And Hartley Hare was one of my heroes when I was a boy. I loved him because he was an anti-hero, really.
He was definitely.
He looked pretty careworn, shall I say, and he had these big buck teeth, and he was a bit hysterical. I mean, you wouldn't get a kids' TV character like him nowadays. I mean, he was very over the top, and I interviewed his creator, Nigel Plaskett, who's a very, very talented actor and puppeteer. He works with the Muppets now, and so I interviewed him in character for a while. So that was fun. Yeah. So on the one hand, I've interviewed a lot of my heroes from when I was a child, kids' TV personalities, and I've also interviewed a lot of my heroes from the sex film era as well. So I've been very blessed, I think. Most of the people I've wanted to interview, I've ended up interviewing. So, in fact, today it's quite unusual to be interviewed myself. It's
to be on the other side.
I'm normally the one asking the questions, but it's nice to meet your heroes. Always good thing to do.
That's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. Well, what you're going to have to do, Sam, you're going to have to keep us updated with everything you do this year. And you've piqued my interest now about the documentary and everything you're working on. So please, as soon as you can get news out there about anything that you're working on, we'll put it on the website, we'll put it on Facebook and Twitter, and so everybody that listens to this can follow, carry on following what you're doing as well, because I'm sure, much like myself, you know, they'd be really interested in keeping up to date with what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone's interested, they can have a look at my my website, which is simonsheridan.com, which has got a list of all, I think it's got a list of all, yeah, it has, of all the DVDs I've worked on. And if you're interested in Mary Millington and her life, I run a website called marymillington.co.uk as well, which has got lots of interesting bits and pieces on, if you want to find out more.
What about, are you on Twitter as well? Can follow you on Twitter, can they?
Yeah, I've just recently joined Twitter. It's a new thing for me. People have been saying to me for years, oh, you need to get on Twitter. So I have just recently joined. I'm not saying that I particularly enjoy it yet, but I'm sure I'll get the hang of it eventually. I'm a bit of a Twitter virgin at the moment, but once I get in the swing of it, yeah, you can follow me on there if you like.
Yeah, and that's it. It's at Simon Sheridan, is that right?
Yeah, it's at SJA Sheridan.
JA Sheridan. Yeah. And of course, the podcast notes on the website, that I'll have all the links and everything, the way the listener can follow everything that Simon's doing, as well as, you know, you've said, Simon, keep us updated, and we'll put everything up on there too.
Yeah, I will do. Of course I will. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you, Dave. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
No problem. It's been great to talk to you as well, Simon. We're looking forward as well to everything that you're going to do for the rest of the year and the years onwards.
Yeah, well maybe I'll come back and we'll chat more 70s porn at some stage in the future.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a date. And there we are, once again, the end of another show. A big thank you to Simon for joining me. I had a great time recording with him, as I'm sure you did listening to him. All the links of how you can find Simon online and buy the books that he's written, the DVDs that he's worked on, including the Keeping the British End Up book that we talked about, will be in the podcast notes on the website. And you can find the website by going to 60minuteswith.co.uk. There is a contact form on there should you wish to contact us, or you can also email us direct, which is contact@60minuteswith.co.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/60minuteswith, and on Twitter we are @60minuteswith. So all that remains is to say, whoever you are, wherever you are, thank you so much for listening. Please keep those subscriptions active, as there's a lot more shows coming to you in the very near future.